And you can turn the reverb off too, please. Matthew 26. Oh, I just moved in a lot closer, didn't I? I don't sound nearly as godly, though, without reverb. Matthew 26, part E today. I promise you we will finish Matthew 26 today. We'll actually get a little ways into Matthew 27. I have not been in a hurry to get through this because these are the last hours of Jesus' life. I just find it thrilling. I find it astonishing, and I can't think of large enough adverbs and adjectives to watch how Jesus treats people at this most critical time in his life, when pretty much everybody in his life has flaked out. Watch how he treats the people who are trying to kill him. Watch how he treats the people who failed miserably despite the fact that they swore they never would. Because it tells us a lot about his heart. The more that you study the real Jesus, the more baffling it will be. How churches ever got it so wrong. It's so clear what he's like. Why are we not like that? He never used coercion. Why are religious people famous for using coercion? He just wouldn't ever resort to that. He had too much love and respect for people to do that. He could have. He was God. I mean, if anyone ever had the power card, the trump card to pull, it would have been him. We're going to see in this section today what we call trials and denials, because it rhymed and it was easy to remember. We're going to see Jesus brought before what really is a mockery of justice. We'll see when he's brought before the Roman authorities next week. We'll see the same thing. But we're going to see that he's the one who's in control. He's not freaking out. He does not resort to the tactics that are used against him. And I just find him heroic and comforting all at the same time. And I think it's a good model because we sure don't react to the same kinds of people in the same kinds of circumstances in our lives. So it's good for that reason, but it just makes me brave, and it makes me love him all the more when I see what he's like. We stopped last week with what I think are maybe the saddest words ever spoken about Jesus' followers, the intimate followers, the ones that hung out with him, the ones that were privy to what he was like on a daily, hourly basis, the ones who saw up close and personal enormous, unprecedented, miraculous things. And verse 56 says, "And then all of the disciples deserted him and ran away." Back up in verse 31, in verse 31, Jesus said, "Tonight all of you guys are going to bail out on me." And skipping down to verse 35, it says, Peter said, "Well, even if I had to die with you, I'd never wimp out on you." And all of the other disciples said the same thing. Did they mean it? Well, yeah, they did. Did they know what they were talking about? No, they didn't. They didn't know how weak they were. They did not know the pressure they were going to be under. I find it comforting that he did. He always knows our weaknesses and our strengths better than we do. That's why when he warns us, it's good to take heed, because he knows better than we do how susceptible we are. Last week when we looked at Peter's downfall and the steps to it, which we will also touch on briefly today, then I can look God in the eyes and I can say, okay, I warned them three times in a row, 3 weeks in a row. It's worth noting because I have made huge mistakes in my life because I didn't pay attention to the warning. So we get the opportunity of seeing Peter thinking he was strong when he was really weak, and Jesus advising him to strengthen himself, and he didn't listen. He didn't guard himself because you don't guard yourself where you think you're strong. You guard yourself where you think you're weak. So guess where the enemy attacks? I've seen more people fall in areas that they consider to be strengths than any other thing. And the reason was because they just didn't think they were weak there, so they didn't put up a guard. So it's valuable for us to look at. So we get the look at Jesus. We get the look at how he reacted to betrayal and failure. And any of you ever see the old John Wayne movie, The Quiet Man? Probably the women hated it. Except I really like Maureen O'Hara's big wild red hair. But John Wayne plays an American who buys some property in Ireland in his family, where his family roots are. See, not a cowboy. And he's constantly being harassed by the locals because the men who try to pick fights with him call him names because he won't fight them. And there's this one scene where this one guy's had it, you know, the little man syndrome, where the guy is, he's a bully simply because no one's ever challenged him. And he's mocking John Wayne, and you're thinking, come on, Duke, just bust him, just bust his chops, because this wimp needs to be taught a lesson. And he turns around and he walks away, and of course they're all mocking him and they're making fun of him. And later in the movie you find out that the reason he won't fight is because he was a boxer in America and he killed a man in the boxing ring, and he's afraid of his own power, and so people are pushing him and calling him names, but he's not going to fight because he doesn't want that on his conscience. And you're going to see Jesus in a similar situation where he could very easily, we saw last week when Peter whipped out his sword, granted a pretty brave act because there were 600 soldiers there to arrest Jesus. Peter whips out his sword to protect Jesus. And of course, all he got was an ear of a servant, sort of an ignominious result from a very bold effort. But Jesus said, Peter, put down the sword, step away from the ear. You know, you use the sword to protect me, then the sword's going to be the way you die. And he said, don't you realize I could have called 80,000 angels in a heartbeat? They would be here to defend me. This is not the way it's going to go down, Peter. I'm not trying to stop this from happening. Nobody takes my life from me. I'm laying it down. So we're going to see Jesus confronted by the religious leaders of Israel who are behaving like monkeys, like apes, uncivilized apes. They are the religious leaders of Israel. You see, so there's a very close-up look at Jesus' character. I believe a model of the way we ought to be under similar circumstances. And we get to look at Peter and his failure. I'm going to ask you once again, as I read through this, to flip over to John chapter 18, because there's a passage that John is the only one of the four Gospels that covers it. So John chapter 18, verses 12 through 15, we're going to read in the midst of our narrative. I'll insert it where it belongs, just so we get the whole timeline. The other thing we have to look at, and I said this last week, is we need a split-screen view of this because there are simultaneous actions taking place. And you really can't write that down in a linear way with prose without saying, well, meanwhile, while this is happening, this is happening. But Peter, the last time we saw him, was moving farther and farther away, trying to be inconspicuous in the world. Setting himself up for his fall. But while that is happening, Jesus is going through two trials. They were both illegal. One was surreptitiously, secretly, sneakily illegal, and the other was just the mockery of justice. So beginning at verse 57 of Matthew 26, and I'll read... let's start with John, because that should be sandwiched in here between verse 56 and verse 57 of Matthew. So turn over to John Jesus just finished addressing Peter, told him to put away the sword, and Jesus is arrested. Verse 12, John 18. And then the detachment of soldiers with its commander and the Jewish officials arrested Jesus. Remember, there were 600 soldiers armed with weapons. Tad overkill, you think? To arrest one carpenter who surrendered anyway? They bound him and brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. There were actually two high priests. There was the ones the Romans sanctioned, and the ones that the one that literally was high priest by succession. Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it would be good if one man died for the people. Let's flip down to verse 19 of John 18 and continue with the pretrial hearing before Annas and his house. Meanwhile, the high priest Annas, should be in parentheses there, questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. I've spoken openly to the world, Jesus replied. I always taught in synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. So why question me? Ask those who heard me. That's by definition witnesses. Surely they know what I said. When Jesus said this, one of the officials nearby struck him in the face. Is this the way to answer the high priest? He demanded. That word for struck in my NIV is the word for a full swing, open-handed slap across the face. That's the scene that reminds me of John Wayne in The Quiet Man. I just love the way Jesus responds to this. Amazing restraint. If I said something wrong, Jesus replied, testify as to what is wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you hit me? By the way, in Jewish legal circles, it was against the law in a court to hit somebody. It was also against the law to not present witness. They technically couldn't have a trial without some witnesses. That's why Jesus said, you know, I did everything I did openly. Why don't you just ask people, do you have any witnesses? Then here he says, okay, you just hit me. That's against the law. Tell me, testify, bring some more witnesses. Tell me what I did wrong. And Annas sent him still bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And Matthew tells us, as you flip back to Matthew 26, Matthew tells us that the whole Sanhedrin was meeting, which included the chief priests and the elders of the people. Matthew, now we're at Matthew 26, verse 57. Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. That body of people was called the Sanhedrin. It was the ruling Jewish body, sanctioned at least partly by Romans, because the Romans were an occupying power. It had limited power, but from the Jewish perspective, they viewed it as the ruling body of Israel. Verse 58 is step four in the five steps to Peter's downfall. Peter followed him at a distance, right up to the courtyard of the high priest. And he entered the courtyard and sat down with the guards to see the outcome. Give him credit, he is following. But you notice who he's seated with. He's ostensibly following Jesus, but he's not seated with any of Jesus's followers. He's seated with the enemy, trying to fit in with the enemy. And that's always a dangerous place to be. You're just cruising for a fall. Verse 59, the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death. So much for a fair trial. Not looking for evidence. to see whether he should be put to death, looking for false evidence because they wanted to put him to death. Interesting, but they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. What's up with that? If there were false witnesses and they couldn't find any false evidence, well, this is the quirky thing about legalism. There was a law in the Jewish books that said if you were going to present a witness, you had to have two witnesses at least that would agree. So they got a bunch of false witnesses to come in, but those guys couldn't even agree. They couldn't get their stories straight. So you got a bunch of false witnesses, but they didn't have, no two of them told the same story. Why even bother? If you're the Sanhedrin, why even bother with that mockery of going by the rules? But that's kind of the way that legalism is, isn't it? You'll totally trash somebody's character and reputation, and instead of calling it gossip and slander, you call it prayer requests. You know, or, you know, rip somebody to pieces because of some violation of the law that you believe is important, and at the same time be guilty of violating it yourself on other issues. It was characteristic of these people. Once again, I remind you, they are the religious leaders of Israel. Anybody remember what the word priest means? It's kind of an important word in here. It's used, I know you know it. It means bridge builder. That's what the Latin word pontifex means, bridge builder. These are the people who are in the position of building a bridge between Israel personally as a nation and their God. Is it any wonder that Israel was so out of whack with their trusting God when the very people building the bridge were like this? Finally, two came forward and declared, "This fellow said, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days." That's not what he said. It was sort of, kind of, partially what he said, but at least they got two false witnesses to agree. Verse 62, then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" Verse 63, but Jesus remained silent. Mark says he remained silent and gave no answer. Somebody told me once, I think it was in a marriage counseling class, if you could put your name in where it says Jesus, but Bob remained silent and gave no answer, they told me, "Bob, you will be a happy man. You know me well enough to know I have not followed that advice very well in my life, even on the microphone." But Jesus remained silent. Considering the pressure he was under, I could think of about 100 things. I can think of scathing remarks I would have made to these people. I would have toasted them in their sandals. And he just kept his mouth shut. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God." Is that ironic or what? You're talking to the living God, asking him, under oath by the living God, to tell the truth. It's like, well, what does Jesus go? Okay, I swear by myself. I just find such irony in that. "Tell us if you are Messiah, the Son of God." By the way, if you have the word Christ in there, that's the English translation of the Greek word for the Hebrew word Messiah. It means God's anointed one. "Tell us if you are Messiah, the Son of God." And the answer is affirmative, somewhat hard to translate in English. My NIV says, "Yes, it is as you say." Some other translations say, "You said it." That would be our common vernacular. It is an affirmative answer. "But I say to all of you," looking around at this body of totally out of whack religious leaders, he said, "In the future, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One," which is one of their names for God. Remember, they were not allowed to pronounce God's name. It was one of their titles for God. You will see me sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. That was messianic prophecy language for coming to judge. He's saying, you're judging me, but I'm God's son, I'm Messiah, and one of these days the tables are going to be turned. That was not the politically correct thing to say to this group of people. The high priest tore his clothes. The King James Bible says rented his clothes. And when I was a kid, I got a big kick out of that. So what, he didn't have his own clothes? He had to go to the high priest tux shop and rent a tux, you know. But rent his garments didn't mean he, you know what I mean. It was funny when you're 12 years old and you're kind of bored with church anyway. Yeah, he rented his clothes and said, he has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? You mean besides the two false witnesses that you finally got? Look, now you've heard the blasphemy. What do you think? He is worthy of death, they answered. And then they spit in his face and struck him with their fists. Who is this? This is the religious leaders. These are the bridge builders of Israel, spiritually. Others slapped him. Again, the word for a full swing, open-handed slap. Mark tells us that the next event, they blindfolded him and hit him, slapped him, and said, prophesy to us, Messiah, who hit you? Don't you bet there were angels holding their breath? There were absolutely astonished hordes, minions of angelic creatures watching this happen, thinking, how can they do this to him? Why doesn't he just think the thought and undo the molecular structure of their body, which in Colossians says he's holding together by his power? Why doesn't he just go poof and they just disintegrate? Now, meanwhile, split screen, while this is all happening, here's what Peter's doing. Now, Peter was sitting out in the courtyard. The other Gospels tell us it was dark, so he's in the darkness around the enemy's fire. Mark tells us he was warming himself at the enemy's fire. And that's step five in Peter's five steps to his fall. Sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. The lowest form of life on the Jewish social scale, the most insignificant, unimportant person imaginable in that culture. A young woman who was a servant. This is Peter, who was willing single-handedly with his sword to protect Jesus against 600 soldiers. All he got was an ear. And when he falls, it's in the dark, in front of an extremely unimportant person. You remember stuff like that later when you fall and Jesus warned you. You also were with Jesus of Galilee, she said, verse 70, but he denied it before them all. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. And then he went out to the gateway where another girl saw him. What is it with girls and the tattling thing? Did I say that out loud? Sorry. All the men are totally afraid to agree with me. Then he went out to the gateway where another girl, I'm not making this up, it says girl right there. Another girl saw him and said to the people there, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. And he denied it again with an oath. I don't know the man. Some sort of, I swear in my mother's grave, you know, or I swear by all that's holy, whatever kind of oath he used, which was a big deal in that culture as well. After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, surely you are one of them because your accent gives you away. And then he began to call down curses on himself, and he swore to them, I don't know that man. Immediately, a rooster crowed, and then, here are the saddest words. Then Peter remembered the word that Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly.